Welcome to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. The goals of Access Advocacy are to improve the lives of patients and caregivers who are dealing with chronic illness of sickle cell disease. Today, I'm speaking with our own Nita Thompson. Hi, Nita.
Hi.
So, Juneteenth is coming up, and that's World Sickle Cell Awareness Day. And we thought, what better show to have than to have you come and talk to us about it?
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining us. So, I love the way you tell this story. So, tell us about the beginnings of the World Health Organization granting us a World Sickle Cell Day.
Okay. Well, the story begins actually way before December of 2008, when the UN passed the resolution to make World Sickle Cell Day June 19th. A group of independent countries globally had been talking to their nations about focusing on sickle cell disease because it is a global health concern. So the leader of the International Sickle Cell Organization chose June 19th because in America, it was the day that we celebrated the last of the Americans, the slaves, being freed. So that was something that all Black people could wrap themselves around. And since basically sickle cell was related to Black people and people looked to America to lead, that's why World Sickle Cell Day was selected to be on June 19th. So Alan Platt had been following it, and Alan Platt is out of Emory. Hey, Alan. He is so awesome. So he put out in his newsletter, which he continues to do faithfully each month, that to let everybody know that the United Nations had put out the resolution and passed it that June 19th would be designated as World Sickle Cell Day. So it was in December. So everybody was waiting patiently, or I was waiting patiently, and January came around and nobody said anything. So I'm like, oh my God, there's a World Sickle Cell Day. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And so I heard you do it because nobody was doing anything. So I acted like the big mouth to go around and let everybody know that there is a World Sickle Cell Day and started giving suggestions about things that we could do for World Sickle Cell Day. Now, the pretense behind World Sickle Cell Day is that we do something in our own communities to bring awareness that not only is sickle cell still out here, but that it is growing. It is the silent illness. In other words, no one's talking about it. So most people think that it is cured, or they never knew that it existed. After the 1970s here in America, no one focused on it because that's when AIDS was recognized and everybody turned their voices, money, and support towards AIDS. Now, the thing about it is it was June 19th, and we here in America and abroad had always been celebrating Juneteenth. A few years ago, we had decided to join Juneteenth, the celebrations, because what we were doing as far as World Sickle Cell Day was basically talking amongst ourselves or going to the UN to celebrate it. And that was not the intent. Again, the intent for World Sickle Cell Day is to, in your own communities, educate society about the needs and the challenges of the sickle cell community, which are blood. We need blood for our patients who are diagnosed with sickle cell and for those that have to either be transfused on a regular basis, which can be every week, maybe once a month, maybe with one unit or more. So we need the same match blood, which is basically African Americans are people that have negative CEK blood, which goes much further than just A, B, negative, positive, RHO, along that line. The other thing is that we need to talk about the curatives. And I say curatives because it's not like a pill or a shot that one can get to be cured from this blood disorder / disease. The curatives are either people 18 through 44 who can register at a live drive or online for free, their bone marrow or their adult stem cells. People 45 through 60 can only register online, and they will be asked to pay approximately $150 because that is the price that it takes for the testing and the collection of it, and that is through Be The Match. So we're asking people again to go on to bethematch.org and register to be a bone marrow donor. And that's by basically by race or by genetic matching. But again, that's basically by race because it's based on genes. The other thing, and that's what most people don't know about, is the umbilical cord blood. There is a public free bank that people can, prior to having the baby born, they can go online and register to donate their cord blood for free. All they have to do is go online, and then they will be asked to fill out the application. They will be mailed the kit, and the thing that is most critical is that they remember to take the kit with them when they go to have the baby delivered. And the best thing about it for not only sickle cell but other blood diseases, like sickle cell, that are so critical for families, is that if a parent is diagnosed with sickle cell or the parents have a child diagnosed with sickle cell, their cord blood will be saved for free for the first 5 years, and then approximately at this point about $200 every year thereafter, but they're hoping within the first 5 years they can use that cord blood to cure either that child or that adult diagnosed. So at least they can have the trait and not the disease.
Well, I have to cut in here and say that when I had Casey 20 years ago, we actually went through this process. Because our hope was that her cord blood could be used to help Marissa. And because they are half-sisters, and where the technology was, where it was at that point, it was deemed not a good match. But the process was just as you've explained. We got the kit, basically, took it with us to the hospital. I had Case. They put it in into the packet, and it was shipped off, and actually we paid for it. And then at one point we thought, as Marissa's health was really deteriorating, that it might be our only avenue. And so we were able to call them up and get a sample. They did blood test on Casey and Marissa, and came back and said she only had a 20% probability of surviving the transplant, so we had to kind of walk away from it. But it's registered, her cord blood's there. If there's ever a match or a need for it, we've said yes, and it feels kind of good. They call themselves Reason One and Reason Two, Marissa being Reason One because she has the disease, and Case being Reason Two because she has the trait, and that kind of is the reason our family is so involved in this battle. But I do encourage everyone that can to please do what Anita has outlined for you. If you are pregnant and you have sickle cell disease in your family, please harvest that cord. Science is changing rapidly, and the uses for it are only going to be expanding. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's perfect. And that's a perfect segue, because just explain that when it comes to minorities, especially African Americans, many of us are blended, and not just African Americans, but others are so blended genetically that many of us don't even match our family members. So we may by only 30% be a match. That's why we have to depend, and we have to understand this as a race of people, that we really have to depend on others who are unrelated. And cord blood is a better match when it comes to others outside of our families. So some of the benefits are cord blood, and it's so awesome. So it's everything from curatives for sickle cell, thalassemia, cancers, leukemias, AIDS, and for our service members who come back from the war and they've had either an arm or a leg that's been blown off and they don't have enough muscle mass to wear their prosthetics. The stem cells in the cord can grow their muscles so that they're able to be more independent by wearing their prosthetics. It's also been used, and now the research for type 2 diabetes, MS, and so many other things. That's the importance of it. In the knee, they're starting to do stem cells, and they're doing, oh God, what is that called?
Infusions.
Thank you so much. There's so much that it's good for. And the thing about it is it matches more minorities. That's the help that we get when we can't do it ourselves. That's why it's so fascinating that Dr. Ron Myers, when I contacted him for Juneteenth, because he's the head of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation. And when I called, because we weren't getting anywhere as far as the sickle cell community reaching out to society. And I'm like, Dr. Myers, we need to join you. We need to get where the people are. And Dr. Myers said, come on, yeah, do that. Really? Juneteenth? World Sickle Cell Day? Yes. So we built a partnership. And I'm so excited about that, because what this allows is for every sickle cell organization, if they are willing to, every sickle cell group, every nonprofit, every support group, if they would only join us in what we're doing, which is to come and participate in the Juneteenth, their local Juneteenth celebration. Come out, participate in, get the table, pass out the literature. We have a newsletter that we'll supply to them. And we're having the cord blood pamphlets sent directly to them so that they can pass them out to educate society. We want to let society know, and the only way we can do this is through reaching out to others, because others don't know this. And it's too often that I go out, and I was doing health fairs, and I come up to people, and either they're pregnant or they were, and they delivered their child, and then I'm telling them, and they're looking at me like, dang, I would have done it. But I didn't know. Because basically the only time they hear about cord blood banking is when somebody will approach them and say, hey, you want to save your own cord blood? Well, yes, you can do this, and it's going to cost you this much money. Or they're never told, because actually the hospital, and that's the competition we face in saving lives, is that the hospitals will collect it and sell it to companies, either research or pharmaceutical companies. And they never tell people. And people just think it's trash to be discarded. They don't understand how impacting that can save somebody's life. And the truth is, if we don't start banking it and saving it, just like a retirement fund for an individual, we will not be ready when the cord blood stem cells can cure, where it's announced that cord blood stem cells can cure this, that, and the other. We won't have the amount of cord blood or stem cells to actually cure people. So people will continue to die, whereas they don't have to if people would only donate.
Wow. First of all, As you know, I've been following stem cell research and had been looking into what they were doing with cord blood, and had kind of stopped when the discussion came to whether or not they were going to be able to, for lack of a better word, stretch the amount of material or cells that they could harvest or grow more stem cells from the cord. And I was sort of stuck in that space thinking about it and kind of missed all the other things that they were able to do with it now. So I'm just jazzed.
And well, now, I applaud you because you are awesome. And it takes all of us to do, you focus on something a little different, but it's the same approach. And we got to talk about what you do because it's still all part of it. I will say they can add two cord bloods, two different cord bloods together. It's a better match than, say, a grown person, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Wow. Okay, now I'm all excited. Stem cells. Okay, so just to sum that up. So if I am a person, let's say I'm a person with sickle cell disease, and I have a child, I'm pregnant, I qualify to have my cord from this pregnancy harvested and frozen for up to 5 years for free.
There is a website that people can go to, and it's a little, see, all right, and I have to be quite honest and, you know, beat me up if you will, or just understand that I don't have time to play because we're talking about people's lives.
Exactly.
And a lot of people be pity-patting around, and I don't have time to be pity-patting around because I'm getting older, and I've been doing this for 20-something years. And we can be a lot further than we are. But mm-hmm. all this political rightness, and you got to be this, and you got to be that, and your foundation, you got to be politically correct. Are you not going to get funded? I don't have time for all that. That's why we have been a grassroots organization for 20-plus years. And we would love donations, but if it don't happen, it don't happen because still our work goes on. So what I want to do is give you the website. So it's parentsguidecordblood.org. It's not parents with the S, but it's P-A-R-E-N-T, parentsguidecordblood.org. Okay. You go there and you'll go to the page that you'll see it where it says, like, other blood diseases, and that's where, again, you have to excuse me, that have challenges. There is another website that people can go to, and they can find out some other things that we're doing for World Sickle Cell Day. And it's, if you go to njof.com. Now, this is very controversial, but this year for World Sickle Cell Day, we're actually focused on stopping the medical manslaughter going on within our sickle cell community. And my take on medical manslaughter is when doctors have cocky attitudes and opinions, and they don't listen to the experts. They ignore what the patient says, and they don't listen to the hematologist.
Right.
And they take it upon themselves to treat sickle cell patients any kind of way, knowing two main things. First, knowing that people diagnosed with sickle cell basically process opioids differently than everybody else. They metabolize the pain medicine in their liver. So when they're given a large dose of medicine, the intent is so that they can keep some of it in their system so that it helps them meet and match the pain where they are so they can stop the pain and then lessen it to spike up, but have it go down so that they can get out of the hospital quicker. But instead, what the doctors do, and they lie, excuse me, they straight out lie, and doctors lie when they say the CDC says that they will lose their license if they give sickle cell patients opioids. That's an out-of-that lie, and anybody can go to the CDC 2016 opioid issue, because under number 46 it says the CDC tells the doctors to follow the NIH guidelines. CDC says they know that sickle cell is a very, very painful disease, and they need their opioids, so follow the NIH guidelines. They are not including sickle cell patients in with their issue for 2016. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing that I have discovered and found out, and I thank the accident, if I have to thank the accident, because it allowed me the time to sit down and think and listen and watch, and then it clicked. It clicked last week, last Wednesday. It clicked that these doctors know, and I confirmed it just from that last week, Wednesday to now, that both doctors and nurses know, because I asked them, and they said, yes, they know. So if they know that sickle cell patients metabolize their pain meds differently, why on earth would a doctor give a patient 0.5 milligrams of anything? It does nothing. And the patient is correct when they're still in pain. 0.5 milligrams does nothing for a sickle cell patient. It might be for someone who doesn't have pain, never had pain. It might help them. But to a patient who was born with a blood challenge and will be in pain from time to time all of their life, there's no way that that can be helpful. But instead, they use it against them. And the reason they do is because they use sickle cell patients as a cash cow for the medical community. Hospitals and emergency rooms get rich off of our sickle cell patients. They keep them in the hospitals long term so they can get money off of them. And more so, they release them or discharge them and they're still in pain. Yes. And then a few days later, their pain has not only gotten worse. They now have a new medical challenge which causes them to go back into the hospital. The doctors murder our patients when a expert will say, I'm admitting my patient, I'm giving my patient this large dose, which is not a large dose for them, and behind the doctor's back, the hospital and the hospitalist will have the opinion that the patient is getting too much med, so they'll all of a sudden drop it to 0.5 milligrams, and the patient has a reaction to a sudden less dose, and the body reacts, and then the patient dies.
Because you got me like jumping in my seat because.
Okay, wait, just let me say one more thing. And then when the patient dies, the doctors come up and say, oh, well, your family member was diagnosed with sickle cell and they weren't expected to live long anyway. Like, that's justification for the medical manslaughter that they have intentionally done. Now say what you will.
Well, I call it death by inhumanity, but we're going to have to take a break and we're coming back and we're going to talk about this a bit more. So I want to thank everyone for listening. You are listening to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. We are currently speaking with Master Sickle Cell Advocate Nita Thompson here in L.A. Welcome back. I'm Adrienne Shapiro in Access Advocacy via thepowerofvoices.com. And today we're speaking with Nita Thompson about World Sickle Cell Day and current challenges with living with sickle cell disease in America. So just before our break, we were talking about how our people are being murdered or left to suffer so painfully by doctors who feel, for whatever reasons, justified in withholding pain meds from our sickle cell community. And I just have to tell you, I was at my daughter's hospital, and she'd been in the hospital for well over a month, maybe 2 months even, and they discharged her, and we were then taking her back within, she'd been out 12 hours. And I had the discharge papers in my hand. And of course, we had to go to the ER. So we go to the ER and we were waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally, they get us in the back. The nurse comes in. She says, the doctor's coming. And so I said, here are her discharge papers. She was discharged less than 12 hours ago. And before this doctor comes in, make sure he reads her chart. Right? So this is her hospital. Discharge papers in hand. The ER doc comes in and he says, oh, well, yes, I've read her chart and everything, and I know she was here, and, well, I'm only going to give her X amount of dosage. So at this point, you know, I'm in full mama polar bear mode, and I'm looking at him, and I said, so you're part of this hospital? Yes, he said. I said, her hematologist runs your oncology department, right? He says, yes. I said, her pain doctor is the head of pain management. He said, yes. I said, and here you are telling me that you don't feel comfortable following their treatment plan.
Yes.
And he just looked at me and he said, yep. Well, you know, the ER has its way. I said, well, understand it from our standpoint. Does she not have a specialized condition? Yes, he said. I said, are not these doctors specialists? Yes, he said. I said, are they not highly regarded in this institution? Yes, he says. I said, are you not employed by the same institution? He said, yes. I said, so do you see the problem I have here? The problem here with what you're saying. So you don't feel comfortable following the advice of the specialist, which you recognize she has a condition that requires, and that we are here, right here, to get help, and we're putting our lives in your hands. You guys need to get this together. This is unacceptable. Well, then he left,
exactly.
Of course, and then they admitted her. But I think that moment, as you said, we have these moments of clarity. I was like, oh my God. You know,
yeah.
So here I'm fighting these battles saying, oh, they need to be educated. They need to be, you know, they need to be taught. They need to know how the physiology of the disease and what's actually this pain is signifying, what's going on in her body. And then that's going to make them want to change.
Excuse me. I got to cut you off because they know.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Well,
they don't care. They straight out don't care because they know. That's the point. And more so, when I call to the medical board of California, they said, oh, we cannot make a doctor do anything.
Exactly.
So how do we make doctors do the humane thing? That's why we started Coalition for the Humane Treatment of Sickle Cell, because they treat dogs. Sickle cell patients say they treat dogs. Dogs get more money. You see actors and actresses on TV sniveling. What dogs go through, sickle cell patients go through, and they don't give shit care, excuse me, about what sickle cell patients go through. Nobody cares because they don't understand, because nobody will come out and tell a sickle cell, nobody will come out and tell the truth. That's why I said, I'm going to tell the truth. The Coalition for the Humane Treatment of Sickle Cell is designed to tell the truth. These doctors know. It's just like you see on TV where a policeman will hit a patient, will hit a person. Last night, it dawned on me to help somebody understand what sickle cell patients go through. Okay? Here it goes. When you have a war and you have somebody who has a gun and they're in uniform, and they come along and somebody comes, and another person from the opposite team, or the opposite people come along, and they now have been captured by this group. And the group come along, and one of the people will take the butt of their gun and hit a person in the mouth. Not only do you see the blood spew out, you see the chipped tooth, and you see that the tooth goes in. And then as it heals, you have the chipped tooth, and the tooth goes in. Now, that person goes back to the barracks. The person heals. The person comes again and goes to another person that has the gun. And they do it also. They take that gun and they take the butt of that gun and they punch it into the side of that person's face. And oh my God, now two teeth happen. They're broken and the side of that person's face is bashed in. And the person goes and gets healed. And then they go back to another officer or soldier. That's what a sickle cell person experienced. They have to go to a doctor. They have to go to emergency room because they're in fear of their life. They're in fear of dying. Mm-hmm. They don't want to go. They'd rather not go, but they have to go because they have no other choice when the pain meds don't work at home. Mm-hmm. And when they pin away, they can't do anything. They can't walk. The pain is so severe. Right, right. They have to go. And they don't want to go because they know, although they'll get a little medicine, they may die. Right. Some of our patients die in the waiting room because people say, you don't have cancer. Your disease is not important. They don't understand it's so much more about pain. Our people have strokes. Our children have strokes, and they go to school and they say your child is stupid, slow, dumb. They don't realize that they've had the stroke because the MRIs cost $1,000 and the insurance rather not pay for that for your child. So your child goes through school being classified as a badass, stupid dummy when all the time they've had a stroke that has gone unidentified. Or as an adult, you go through your life having several small or mini strokes going unidentified. People don't understand sickle cell. People wonder why people walk with a hip. People don't understand that your hip, you can have a limp. You walk with a limp and you're walking and what's wrong with your hip? They don't understand that in the body, anywhere that the blood flows, with the small veins of capillaries, that you can have a roadblock of the blood flow, just like on the 405 freeway during rush hour traffic when not even the emergency vehicles can go through. Everything stops. Now, how do you feel as a person when everything stops and you're the third or fourth or tenth car? You can't move. How about when the blood can't do that in the body? Therefore, if you can't move, the oxygen can't get to where it needs to be, and that area in the body dies. Now, remember, the doctors could do something, but they refuse. And they tell you to sit your butt down for 2, 3, 4, 12 hours, whereas naturally they should, and by legal, humane treatment. They need to get you back and get you oxygen and get you hydrated within 20 minutes of you arriving at the emergency room.
Right.
But they don't. They don't. And what they do by not getting that oxygen moving quickly is they create chronic pain.
Right.
And with chronic pain comes more need for pain meds, which they want to refuse. And now that we got this opioid issue, which is another lie, because the opioid issue that people are dying from and having heart attacks and such comes from illegal drugs, from the fentanyl that comes from Mexico and China, which is street drugs. It's not the medicine that's approved by the FDA. A doctor's prescriptions. And see, that's a whole nother story. But those are the issues that we're putting in our newsletter that's going out for World Sickle Cell Day. All of this, all everything that we have spoken about are the issues that we have to. And again, if nobody's willing to put it out, then that's on you, because we are not helping ourselves when we back up and say, no, it's too controversial. No, we don't want to. I say, right. Let me be the butt of this. Let me, as an advocate, let me be the one that the doctors are talk to crazy. But as long as they treat my patient right, be mad at me, doctor, but please treat my patient right. And that's what I get when I go in the hospitals and I advocate for people. When I go to the schools and I tell the people, hey, listen, California law says you have to have either an IEP or a 504. You have to make accommodations for this patient, for this child, to help them meet their education needs.
Right.
And roadmaps so they can be successful. All people want is to live their best life, to get their best education, and then to be a positive member of society. But when you're forced to go from hospital to hospital, and then God, it's so much. I mean, I can just go on and on. We got medical people that will laugh at our patients in the hospital, laugh at them. they're having, look at them, they're crying. You know, they're in all this pain and they absolutely laugh at them. I'm not even going to go into the fact that when you have a certain type of insurance, what type of medical providers you can only have. Medicaid versus Medicare versus private.
Right.
There's so many things. This is so deep what they do to people until it's unreal. It's all legally protected. I say not. So on this, I mean, there's so much that we're planning to do, but we really have to fight and open up. We really have to complain, but I do understand why people diagnose, deal with it, because they have to go back to the hospital if that's the only hospital within 30 miles,
right.
If that's the only hospital that a ambulance will take them to when they have to use an ambulance. So they have to deal with this. It's going to take other people to step up and fight their battle, because they can't fight. Because if they make a big deal, the hospital will blacklist them, will abuse them because they have complaints. And I have seen it. I have seen it with my own eyes. We've had to, if we could, get some doctors removed from some hospitals. I mean, it's crazy what we go through. And it's not just a black disease. They do it also to people who are Hispanic and who are Asian and who are white.
Right. Well, I think, I mean, as always, I mean, you live this. I mean, so when I hear you speak and I'm like, it's almost like church, because you're speaking my truth. You're speaking what I witness. I remember once when Marissa was in the hospital and Ron had taken her, and and he came home. We switched, right? Because, you know, you don't want to leave them ever alone. And he sang to me.
That's right.
They'd been there for hours. And then when I got there, I could hear her as I came through the double doors making that feral sound that they make when they're in such pain, like a wounded animal.
Yes.
And I came in and the nurses, you know, looked at me and I was like, she's been like this for hours. And they're like, well, her doctor won't call back. So I picked the phone up and I called her doctor and I said, you know, and I got the recording, of course, because it was late. And I said, I want you to hear this. And, you know, it's that I can only think of it, as you said, it's a feral sound. Like if you know that sound when a dog's been hit by a car.
Yes.
And everybody
yes.
stops, right?
Yes.
People risk their lives to get out and find that dog. So she's making that sound. So I just put the phone up and I said to them, I said, that's my child. I said, if she were a dog, you would not allow this.
Yes.
And I said, I'm calling back every 2 minutes. And I hung up. Well, suddenly, phones start ringing at the nurse's station, right? And
yeah.
things were going on. They were started scrambling because, of course, I was there. And
yes.
I pick up the phone within 2 minutes to call back again because I said I was going to call every 2 minutes until they answered the phone. The
yeah.
Charge nurse runs in and she's like, oh, please, please, just put the phone down. We're taking care of it. And
yes.
I remember just this blinding rage.
Yes.
I was like, I see why people become radicalized by the unfairness
yes.
of it all, by people just, it's not even you want to be treated better. You just want to be treated fairly.
Yes. You just want to be treated like a human,
like a human.
Person.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, don't look at the skin color because it don't have nothing to do with skin color.
Right, right. And I, you know, you've been at this 20 plus years. I've been at this all my life as my brother, older brother had sickle cell and I was by my mom's side
yes.
Through his life. And I've come to the point now where I'm like where you are. You have to hold their feet to the fire. You have to have policy. You have to have rules that have teeth in them. Pleading to their humanity. I mean, I've had discussions where docs have said to me they felt better about withholding the pain med to prevent that person from potentially becoming a drug addict than they felt about giving them the pain meds, right?
Yes.
And not, I mean, that the withholding the pain meds was basically a slow, agonizing death of their organs and their brain. And the doctor looked at me and said, yes.
Exactly.
And at that
they
point,
know
I
that.
Thought, as you said, he knows it. So at that point,
yes.
what do we need to have in place? What do we need to have in place? And I keep coming back to policy. It was only policy.
Yes.
That got our kids the sickle cell protocols, all right?
Yes.
So our children live. Children in the rest of the world don't live past the age of five. I mean, let's just be,
yes.
so we're talking India, Africa,
yes.
parts of China,
yes.
South America.
Vietnam.
Philippines,
Central South America, exactly.
Exactly.
Greece,
so
Saudi Arabia,
right.
yes.
Yeah, but it's the same disease. So sickle cell is
exactly.
not different. But what's different is we have those protocols. And
yes.
I'm like, we need to have that in place for our adults, just like we
yes.
do for our kids. And
yes. well, see,
how do we
thing
do that?
Is, the thing, okay, how will we do it? First, let's admit the truth and stop lying. Stop lying. Because there's no way that a person diagnosed with sickle cell is going to become a drug abuser. They are opioid non-abusers. They use the opioid to get them out of their pain crisis. If they follow the NIH guidelines, which says give them a large enough dose to meet their pain and then titrate down, get them feeling well, they go on with life. First of all, let me back up to say, people diagnosed with sickle cell have careers. They have families. They have children. They get married. They're productive members of society. They're attorneys, doctors, nurses, postal people, janitors, real estate. They have their own businesses, their husbands, wives, children, parents, grandparents, and let me go on. They're drivers. Some of them are politicians. They're heads of universities. So don't let they're actors, actresses, musicians. Where can I stop? I cannot stop because they're people, and you cannot tell sometimes unless they would tell you. That you may look to your left and look to your right, look in front of you and behind you, and some of those people have sickle cell, and you would not know it. So that's the first thing. They're in every race. It has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with black people or Africa. It had to do with malaria. So let's be straight about that. And third of all, a doctor, you know, see, it's so insulting because these people come from a place of, you think they come from a place of knowing, because everybody puts the doctors on a pedestal like they're God. They're liars. There are liars when they say, if you're given morphine, you will become a heroin addict. That's a straight out lie. There is no evidence-based proof to that. It is a lie. Now, what's happening is people, the doctors, the people who know, the long-term doctors, the older guys that have been doing this for years, that know how to manage sickle cell, they are being targeted now. Because, you know, you always have something where this is the big deal and this is the thing, and later on it always turns out to be a fluke, and then the society be apologetic. They're targeting our doctors and saying that they're dispensing opioids too much. We have a case here in California where medical manslaughter happened because the hospitalist and the hospital ignorantly agreed that a doctor that was giving their patient too much medicine decided to take it upon their own self without notifying the doctor to decrease significantly, not even titrate down, but just significantly decrease, and the patient died. They don't care. You don't do that. And then they have the nerve to say, oh, we're going to complain about you. We're going to talk about you because you're giving too much meds. They turn around and murdered the patient without notifying the doctor. The doctor had to call in to find out that his patient had been murdered by them. You know, you can't clean up stuff like that because you lie. The thing is, what I asked the DEA reps to do, and they refused to do it, and I also asked the CDC to do, and they refused to do. I'm like, we still need to clear it up because these doctors still have it confused. The DEA and the CDC stated, their employees stated, they knew the doctors would act like this. They knew that they would just say, forget it. We ain't going to give nobody opioids. We just going to take care of ourselves and protect our licenses, even after it's written. They talk about people don't read. How about people don't care because they want to keep all that's right with their pocketbooks? So they will impact families. They will impact generations of people to murder their people and torture their people and see families crumble just to pad their pockets and make sure their children and their house and their cars are safe. That is inhumane. And unless we step up and challenge them to prove it, I don't care who you are, you prove it to me. You say that you're going to give a sickle cell patient say 2 milligrams or 5 milligrams or 1 milligram, because you don't want them to become an addict, opioid abuser. Prove it to me that that happens. They parrot that out of their mouths with no evidence. Prove it. Right. Whereas the NIH has evidence-based practices of what works, and they're ignored. Even after I and others have shared the information with them. I even got a call from a person in another state at another hospital, and I have the paperwork right in front of me. It's from the University of Michigan Hospital. And I was advocating for a patient. And first, the patient relations. So I emailed the information to the receptionist coordinator in patient relations. And then they had a social worker come into the patient's room. I talked to the social worker, got her information and name, emailed her the same information that I emailed the patient relations, which they really don't have that title. And I also contacted the administration office. That lady had the nerve to tell me they got the hospital administration and legal involved, and they still abuse the patient. But that's all right, because now I have my track record. And I'm sharing this information with others in case they try to shut me up. It ain't just me. People are fed up with the treatment that has continued over the decades. So you've got 3 generations. You represent, what, right. 2, 3 generations?
4.
Your mother, your brother, and your child. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. I'm sorry. I can just go on and on about this, and I am very upset and very frustrated and tired. I'm through. It's all a lie. They're now challenging doctors, good doctors, because
right.
they're trying to cover up their lies. So we just need to stop it now. We need to have, and let me just back up to say, and I am serious, I agree with President Trump. We need to make America great again. How we need to do it is to address the way that people are treating sickle cell. We need to be the forefront as far as America on addressing sickle cell and show that we and that he treats all Americans the same. Americans. We're in America.
I think.
Not just Black Americans.
Right. I think you've said it perfectly. I want to thank you, Tanita Thompson. We're going to be back on another show at another time outlining how you can help support our battle, what we need to do as far as pushing this agenda forward for the fair treatment of our community. And all I can say is fight on, Anita. You're an inspiration to me and thousands of others. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, my crazy self. Keeping it real.
We'll be right back. Well, we're out of time now, but before we go, I wanted to let you know that you can learn more about our organization on our website, accessadvocacy.org, or on the Access Advocacy Facebook page. That's axisadvocacy.org. Join us again next Tuesday on thepowerofvoices.com at noon Pacific. Or listen anytime on demand at accessadvocacy.org. You'll find all our programs there. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. Thank you for listening. Pushing, keep on pushing.